again.
It was episode 39, actually. It was June 2021. This is going to be an intro, and we're going to catch all of ourselves up with the last time we talked to Dad, How Do I? Rob Kenny, who now sits across from us with an extra 1.2 million subscribers. Now, first of all, it was crazy enough that it has been over 2 years, because that is a crazy amount of time in this new warped...
Time is such a construct, especially after the pandemic. It's just all bets are off.
Welcome to the podcast. Back to the podcast, Rob Kenny. And let's start off with, how have things been with you since June 2021?
It's all a blur, honestly. It's thanks for having me back. It's been, like I mentioned, it's a crazy ride. Things have been, goes in spurts where it kind of levels off and seems like, okay, maybe it's kind of ran its course, and then, oh boy, now Indonesia found it. So just recently Taiwan and Indonesia, I'm getting a bunch of comments. So somebody must have posted something over there. And so then it has grown again from that, even just yesterday.
I think you have the most beloved channel on YouTube.
Oh, well,
there's just no way around it.
I'm trying, doing the best I can.
It must be interesting to see how the world globally does work in these waves. Do you find that when it hits there, it hits with that same kind of energy, and do you kind of get received in that same way, where it's like, oh my goodness, it's Dad, and he's here for us.
I'm so grateful for it. It's just, it's so strange. And like I've shared so many times, I didn't expect this to be what it is. Of course, I thought I was just going to help 30 or 40 people. Honestly, that was kind of my goal.
How to tie a tie.
Kind of have this community of people. And I was actually interviewed in Bulgaria yesterday. I was on that's going to air, I think, on December 3rd, they said. And they were talking about all the people in the studio are fans and watch my channel. And so, yeah, it's crazy. And I brought up the whole thing about tying a tie. And, there's a million and one videos about tying a tie. And yet, for some reason, when I'm shown how to tie a tie, people are crying watching me tie a tie. And so maybe it's because my skill level isn't very good and they feel sorry for me. Yeah, it's crazy. It's just resonating on a level that I never anticipated.
Well, I think a lot of it is just that, and people crying is because, and I noticed by looking through the comments of any of your videos, it feels like almost a confessional in a lot of ways. Like people want to somehow reveal themselves, or maybe they want to relate a story about their dad or the dad that wasn't around. And I think that for a lot of people, you've kind of become that surrogate dad they never had.
Yeah, it seems that way. I think you're right. I think I'm surprised at, how open they are. And I get emails too. So, you're seeing I'm sure you guys can relate. You see a tip of what is actually happening. I get emails and stuff of things I never anticipated. I had a gal that wrote me, and she went through trauma because she was in a domestic relationship, and she got out of it. And then part of her therapy, she listens to my channel while she falls asleep and just listens to me talk and to try to a calming voice for her. So it's just, there's so many different things that I didn't anticipate at all. I thought I was just showing people how to tie a tie or how to shave.
Do you keep track in any way of your media appearances? Do you either journal or log them, or like to remember the sheer amount that you've done at this point?
I should. I don't, though. That's actually a really good idea. I should actually start doing that. I did early on, and so I have a record of like the first 3 or 4 months. And then I haven't kept that up. I was on Hoda and Jenna. Did you see that? I was on Hoda and Jenna, around Father's Day. We're out in New York in studio. So that was a little different because that's, out of my comfort zone.
Yeah. Yeah. And you had a crew come out to your place too and shoot for your third anniversary.
Yeah. That was Hager sponsored that. And we had, I think it was 12 people here. And so that was a little, my introverted self was wanting to run and hide. So It's good though. I'm getting, you know, I have to 3.5 years into it. I have to, at this point, kind of just.
You just got to lean into it.
Yeah.
Is there any differences between countries when you have an interview in, you know, different around the world? Are they all pretty much asking similar questions, or do they have different concerns and questions for you?
Yeah, you know, since I was just on the Bulgaria interview, that's fresh in my mind. And one of the things I felt like they were really leaning into is that I was out to help young men. And yeah, I get that I am out to help young men, but I'm also out to help anybody and everybody. I joke about I have 80-year-old kids because I have people say, hey, I'm 80s and I follow you and I'm grateful for your tips. Cause I don't want to be pigeonholed that I'm just helping men. I think I'm trying to help anybody and everybody that could use some help.
Do you mind if we go all the way back for perhaps people who didn't hear the first episode and perhaps hear your story of how the channel actually even came about in the first place?
Yeah. So I had thought of the channel prior to the pandemic. So about 2018, 2019, I was thinking of this idea and I came up with the idea of Dad, How Do I, when it was, I pictured one of my kids in the other room yelling, Dad, how do I, and then I'd come running and fix it. And I just, you know, I tabled it, thought I'm busy. I got too many other things going on. And so, but then when the pandemic hit, I kind of ran out of excuses. My daughter had been on me, Dad, you know, gently, Dad, that's something you need to do. If that's what you want to do, I think you should do it. And I was trying to share some stuff that I'd learned the hard way, a lot of it the hard way. You know, some of it I've used YouTube to learn things too. But a lot of times you'll watch a 20-minute video and, you know, they dangle that nugget in front of you and tell, okay, that's where you squeezed it in. You know, I finally got it. And so my hope was to try to boil it down to those things to make it easy, the content easy to get to for people to learn how to do things and try not to waste your time. And so that was the idea behind the channel. And then, so my first, I started my channel April 1st of 2020, April Fools. So, and then my first upload, How to Tie a Tie, was April 2nd. And, it wasn't long after that where people started getting a hold of it and then it got posted on Reddit and that's when it really went viral in May. So it was only a month and a half after I posted my first video. I had probably 8 videos, I think, up at that time. And I had over 1 million subscribers around May 20th or so.
Why do you think people... that particular video resonated with people in that way, considering there were probably dozens, if not even more, on how to tie a tie videos on YouTube. Why this one?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it was a mixture of all the different things that, you know, maybe you missed your dad. Maybe you never had a good dad. Maybe, I don't know.
Kind of the way you formatted it. Yeah.
I think so. And I think, you know, I tried to be endearing, but, you know, people always find fault. I'm sure you guys can relate to that. They'll find fault with whatever you do. So I said, you know, I say in it, don't do that because that's dorky. You know, if you have a big knot and a short tie, it's dorky. And I'm saying it as a term of endearment. I'm not trying to, I'm a dork, you know, I mean, what, what's the, you know.
At this point, do you ever kind of feel like you're just playing a role, or is your whole persona completely authentic? Because this is kind of a topic I think a lot of us have to deal with on YouTube, is authenticity and how much of ourself is the real self. And then at some point, especially here you are after 3 years, how self-aware are you of that? And you kind of think, okay, now this is the character, Rob, and it's not really me.
Yeah, I think about that. You know, I think you would, it'd be weird if I didn't think about it, because it is, you know, and I do recognize that it's the best of me. You know, I've lost my temper, you know, but I'm not going to lose my temper on and put it up on a channel. I think that would be strange. And so
well, that would go viral.
It would. And then I'd lose my platform. So, you know, I am trying to do the best I can. You know, I'm a man of faith, and so I do try to share that as well whenever I get the opportunity, without coming across preachy, because I don't want to do that, because I want anybody and everybody to feel welcome. And so walking that line is a little tricky, trying to figure out, you know, what, because I would actually prefer that I could share more of that, I think, because that's stuff I've reasoned through. I think I have good answers for the questions, at least, that I struggled with when I was younger.
Regarding what, your faith?
Regarding my faith.
Okay.
What I believe. I think there's good answers for stuff, and I would, but I don't think my platform's the place to do
you
that.
You think it would be a debate, and it would become a debate?
Yeah, and I don't want to do that. So I just don't think it makes sense. I think I'm called, I feel like I'm called to love people. And sure. So I'm trying to do that and walk that line.
Are there any other topics that you kind of think would be off limits? And I know, because a lot of your audience is, well, probably most of them are young people. I'm going to guess early 20s or something, that they kind of have this nostalgia for maybe the dad that wasn't there or whatever. But would you ever cover like, how to be a critical thinker when it comes to social media, how to look at news objectively, or would that also kind of be starting to get into a more political nature?
Yeah, it's a fine line. And so trying to pick and choose that, I would like for people to, because I've been thinking about a Wisdom Wednesday that talks about the straw man argument of, yeah, you know, and because so many people are guilty of it. We're all guilty of it, I guess, to some extent, but, oh, that's just easy. I'll just knock it over. Well, you know, there might be more to it than what you're actually presenting for the other side. And so I've thought about that. I think that would actually be, that would fit. I think it wouldn't be a smart move to divide my audience by choosing a side or endorsing a political candidate or something like that, because I, you know, I'm sure there's people on both sides.
So politics and religion are pretty much out.
It's tough. I, you know, in any interview, I try to share what I believe, because that's not on my platform, you know. And so if given the opportunity, then I'm open about my faith, because I think I'd be doing a disservice to everybody if I said, follow me, because I think, unfortunately, people, sadly, will let you down. I think if you put people on a pedestal, nobody's perfect. None of us are, you know. And so if, I think we tend to put people on a pedestal. I think that's a common thing for people to do. And then we're disappointed when they fail, when really they're just human beings too.
And you're on that pedestal right now with a lot of people.
I think so. And I it's a scary place to be, because don't do that to me, and it's not fair to me, and it's not fair to you, and I'll disappoint you. And so be careful.
Forgiveness is an important part, and the power of forgiveness. And how did that come about in your life personally?
Yeah, I share about my story in my book about forgiveness and forgiving my dad. And I'm embarrassed to say it took me forever, forever. It seemed like forever to actually forgive my dad. And I think part of it was I was waiting just for people that don't know, my dad left when I was 14, and I went to live with my brother. And it was actually, you know, he made it official when I was 14, but he kind of was out of my life for a year or two before that, and then made it official when I was 14. I went to live with my brother. And it took me a long time to forgive him. And I think part of the mistake I made was I was kind of waiting for him to come to me and ask for forgiveness. And I think he had kind of moved on with his life. And so that wasn't happening. And meanwhile, my life was passing by. And so I had to come to grips with the fact that I just needed to forgive him and let it go, whether he asked or not. And I've shared that a lot on interviews and on my channel even too, that, you know, there's freedom in forgiveness for you. And I think so often we get confused and we think that it's about the other person, when really, you know, it's that saying of, it's like drinking unforgiveness is like drinking poison and hoping it hurts the other person, when really you're hurting right. yourself. So there was freedom for me on the other side of forgiveness that I didn't anticipate. And I'm so grateful for it, because it's, man, you're like, whoa, that's a huge plate that I was spinning. And I've talked about that, like that I was spinning, keeping, you know, spending energy, putting power towards that. I'm no longer spending energy on that. I can spend it on something positive to move forward in my life.
And when did this forgiveness come about with you? And is your dad still around?
No, he passed. I think it's probably been 8 or 9 years ago now. Okay. And he actually did ask for forgiveness at the end, but I'd already forgiven him by that time. So it was anticlimactic. But yeah, it took me a long time. It was probably, I'm 59 now. So we're celebrating our 60th next year, my wife and I both. But I probably mid-40s is when I finally let go of it.
Was there a catalyst? Was there something that caused you to kind of search deeper to want to find forgiveness?
Yeah, I think it was just the realization. And that quote was big for me. I heard that quote and I'm like, boy, that's me. I'm drinking poison and hoping it somehow hurts my dad and it's killing me. And so hearing that was really eye-opening for me. It was like an epiphany. And, you know, I have my quiet time in the morning where I share this in my book. I'm certainly not trying to act like I'm so spiritual that I always keep it, but I do try to keep it. And, you know, there's a lot of tears shed just in my quiet time that I needed to get this out. My brother, Rick, who I lived with when my dad left, he helped me through that too. He was, it was therapeutic to talk through it with him. And from an older, older person's perspective, he was 23. So I was looking at it from a kid going through puberty and my dad left, what now? And where he'd been in the military and he'd kind of been able to process some of the stuff. So he's able to kind of shed light on some of the stuff that I hadn't seen. And so I think I look at everything pretty healthy now, looking back and go, okay, and I try to empathize even with my dad, what he went through and with what my mom went through. And I share that story in my book, because I think it's just healthy, I think, to be able to face trauma like that. And it's helped me these past couple of years, these past 3.5 years talking about it, because it's like, it's no longer painful and brings tears to my eyes like it did early on.
Does dad, how do I represent the dad you wished you had?
That's a tough question. I would say so. I think it's the best of me. I think I certainly have lost my temper. And one of the things, I try to do with my channel is to encourage other dads to, hang in there, do the best you can. You're not perfect. You're going to make mistakes, but also ask for forgiveness. Again, if you mess up, I think that's good to be on the same page with your kids. I try to empathize with dads and what we go through. You go to work and and then you're expected to know how to fix everything at home. And it can be frustrating. You might be working on your car and you're like, I can't figure this out. And meanwhile, you want it to be a powerful time where your kid comes in and want them to help you. And you're frustrated because you don't know how to do it. And so that anger can often come out in frustration, I think, towards your kids. And so again, I'm trying to present really what the ideal situation would be. I think where you're talking calmly and trying to walk through the thing and try to encourage other dads.
I remember one time my dad came to me just maybe 10, 15 years ago and apologized to me for something that I didn't even realize it had been bothering him as a dad. And it was kind of along those same lines as I remember he was building a cover over our patio, and he was up there, and I always tried to help out whenever I could, as much as a kid could really help out. But I remember climbing up the ladder and asking him if he needed help. And he says, the way you could help me is by leaving me alone. And I never gave it.
It's like a classic dad.
I never gave it much thought, but if for some reason that weighed on him for years. And it was like 15 years ago. He says, I really, that's something that's always bothered me. I really wished I had not said that. And so it's kind of funny. Sometimes these little things we might do can just have an impact on our own lives. And we kind of just need to purge ourselves.
Okay. So you've mentioned your book a few times. What was the book writing experience like for you?
I had a ghostwriter. So I would honestly tell you that English growing up, I, it wasn't, I don't feel like I had any teacher that believed I could be a good writer. So that always stung a little bit. So I never built my confidence in
English teachers are the worst. Honestly.
Well, maybe. So I never felt like I could write well. And so I right away when I was offered a book deal, I got a ghostwriter that really helped me, you know, put it into good words.
I speak good.
And so that helped, I think, having that. And he kind of walked me through it because he's written several books. His name's Marcus Brotherton, and he's written some of his own stuff that's done well. He was involved with Band of Brothers. To some capacity. But anyway, he was great. He was a perfect ghostwriter, especially for my first book. And as I got my feet underneath me, there was times where I would rewrite stuff myself and then he'd say, this looks great. And so, okay, well, maybe my English teacher didn't know what she was doing.
She didn't.
Interested in writing more books? This is something that you...
I'd like to. Yeah, I think, but no pressure, I think, with it. That's not something I'm necessarily pursuing. I got so many other things that are happening with opportunities that I can't really speak about just yet. But it's all good. I don't know if you guys are aware, but I actually did a podcast for a time for about a year with my nephew. And so and that was kind of fun, but my bandwidth was just, I didn't have the bandwidth to get it all done. And we were going out, he lives about 30 minutes from me. So I'd drive out to his studio and we'd record a couple. And then I drive back. And so that's how we were doing it. It was just, it was a little cumbersome. And so.
Does that mindset hold true for YouTube, or because it's such a large audience, do you feel more of an obligation to do stuff over there?
Yeah, no, I feel like I want to keep that going. I think that's good because I still feel like I got good content and more stuff that I want to get up. And shorts have helped too, I think. The nice thing about shorts is I can put something together that I can put on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, right. and YouTube and still keep all of it going. I want to keep my longer content going too, because I think that that's, there's things that you just can't do in a short. You can pretend that you can get it done. See how easy this is? 60 seconds and I just changed an outlet. Okay.
But I got to say, I don't think I've ever seen a YouTube channel quite like yours where you have continual subscriptions coming in. I mean, on a large scale, people are subscribing to your channel, but I think they're subscribing to your channel because they kind of just support the concept. Does this bother you that you can individual videos aren't getting these massive view counts, that it's a very small, and are those people who are continually watching your videos the same people, or do you think people are just kind of just dropping in and out?
Yeah, I don't know. I've tried to figure out the YouTube algorithm like everybody else to try to figure out what's going on. I gain 20, 30,000 subscribers a month, and yet the new videos that I put out have 10,000 views. Right. You know, what's going on? I don't understand it. So I'm in the process of working with somebody. Just got that ball rolling, actually. I have a meeting next month with a person who I consider kind of a guru with that to help me better understand what I can do.
Can you tell us who that is? We may know him.
Daryl Eves.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Did you go to, were you at Vid Summit?
I was not. Oh, okay. I didn't know anything about it. All right. So I got a meeting set up with him to try to help me figure out what I can do. If there's anything within my power, I'm happy to do it. You know, you get a million and one people saying, this is what you should do. You know what you should do? This is what you should do. Well, it's like, I'm happy to do it if I have a voice that's I can trust to tell me what what I should do. I don't want to waste hours and hours on something that doesn't move the needle.
Just copy Mr. Beast.
There you go. That's a big smile. <isn't it>?
Yeah. He's figured something out, right? I mean, I've watched some of his content and I'm like...
Well, Daryl's worked with him for years. I think right. Daryl kind of grew his channel from nothing to where it is.
Yeah.
Do you feel a responsibility to be incredibly mindful of sponsors and how you kind of monetize the channel, knowing how special kind of what you've managed to build is?
I think absolutely I do. And I haven't always done that right. You know, I can look back and go, that one wasn't as good as I would have liked to. I'm sure you guys can relate, though. Sometimes you get a sponsor and a sponsor will say, oh, we just want to have a feel good thing. And it's like, and then you get the brief and I'm like, what are all these words that you're wanting me to say? You're going to lose people after the first 30 seconds. You know, I think if brand, and I got some great sponsors now, Firestone is a great sponsor.
Are they paying well? Are they pay you well? Because we're keep hearing stories about sponsors getting just worse and worse about what they're paying creators.
Yeah, it depends. And it's funny because I get people, oh, we're willing to pay you X amount of dollars and you're not interested. And I'm like, no. You know, where Firestone's been, I do believe Firestone also likes what I'm doing. I've been convinced of that they not only want to, you know, of course they're, you know, they gotta make it worth their while to pay me, but I think they also like what I'm doing, and so they are also kind of helping to support that. And they, you know, they've done a couple where recently they just flew me out to Nashville and I just talked about a cool thing that they're doing out there. It was no, hey, buy your Firestone tires. It was just a feel good moment.
You're just unique in this space. You really are. Everything about your channel seems to be different than almost every other YouTube channel. Everything about it is kind of flipped upside down and it's really interesting to see.
Yeah, I do my best. So I did Sentry Safe. I just had a Sentry Safe Master Lock Sentry Safe. Wanted to do a reel. And they were great too. You know, they didn't ask me to say a whole lot. I tried to not make it salesy. And I, you know, anytime I get a chance to give my input to these sponsors, I tell them, I think you got to be careful with having it come across too salesy because you'll lose people. People will click away because they know they're, you know, whereas if you can just come along, get your name there and just associate it with the wholesomeness, which I'm trying, you know, I think if they can stay there, it's a win-win for everybody. I think if you start, you got to say this and we're doing this promo and we're doing that, people click away. You're kidding yourself if you think that they're going to stay there for that whole ad, right? If it becomes an ad, then it's not good. So then I do try to filter. I get almost on a daily basis, I get people wanting to do sponsored stuff on my channel and I filter through 98% of it. And then I pass the 2% along to my manager and say, I think this is one that we should consider.
How did the Hagar opportunity come about?
Yeah, they emailed me and said they wanted to, and it was, you know, again, not salesy. And I say that I didn't have to post that video, but they did such a nice job on the video. It would be silly not for me not to put that up on my channel. They were great. Again, and if you watch the video, there's not a whole lot of buy a Hagar slacks, or, you know,
it's really a great example of you tying the tie. There's the quick logo reveal,
right,
which,
you know,
that's you get the money shot and all of the rest, but like, it is so well integrated. Hence why I brought it up. Like you mentioned that, I think you said your first suit was a Hagar suit. So there was like, this almost like it's a dream brand connection for the wholesomeness out.
Right. Like it makes sense. And so, and I, you know, I've always tried to do the best I could to promote stuff that I would also feel good promoting to my friends and my family, you know, my own kids. And I've said that before, this is what I'd tell my own kids. So this is what I'm telling you. And so I've done my best to filter through those brands. Like there's certain brands I just really,
yeah,
love.
I also think there's a certain authenticity to making a fully integrated brand sponsored video rather than just a 60-second spot in a video that breaks up, that is completely unrelated to what you're talking. Chad, you might have seen that video that Joel Haver made on this very issue where he's made complete animations that are really, the entire thing is sponsored, but the audience loves it because what he's producing is actually entertaining and useful and everything, but it's all wrapped under this sponsorship, which somehow is more authentic than talking about a topic, cutting it off in the middle. Hey, here's NordVPN, guys. And everybody's click, 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 click six times to get through that thing. And then back to the show. So yeah, I think that's a smart move.
You mentioned my brother recently had his last child move out of the house. And he told me the other day that like becoming an empty nester is like one of the most emotionally impactful things that had ever happened to him in his life. And I was reading an article with you where you kind of mentioned that it was a really bittersweet time for you as well. Do you remember? And how long ago was this that you became an empty nester?
Yeah, we've been, my wife and I, we wanted to raise good adults. And so I don't want to raise good kids. And I think a lot of times people will maybe not equip their kids well enough. And then they end up living in their basement. And there's a sense of kind of like that because they're close, you know, because honestly, the drawback of raising good adults is my son's in Virginia and my daughter was in New York. She just moved back. You know, they're equipped to be able to go other places rather than living in my basement. And so it's been bittersweet. I remember when my wife and I dropped off my son at community college about 5 hours away, and he was 18, you know, and we we drove home crying for the next 15 minutes. It was just painful. Rip your heart out hard, you know. And then when my daughter moved to Tennessee, my daughter and her husband moved to Tennessee, it was hard, but it was good for them. I was like, you guys, this is something you need to do, because they were newly married. They were only married about a year. I'm like, as hard as it is for me to see you go, you need to go. This is great, great opportunity. So, and then my son moving to Virginia, that was hard. It was, all came through tears, but boy, ultimately he's thrived over there. He's killing it. You know, he works for AWS out in Virginia and he's loving life. So it's all good, but yeah, it's hard. It's definitely a process of trying to, wow, now what next? You know, that was kind of our goal, was to raise good adults. And then when they were gone, it's hard.
Got to get a puppy.
And like gone, because it's not like the, you know, 25 years ago where you'd live a couple neighborhoods away from your parents. Now it's like, no, it's fine to go to a different city or country or whatnot.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you're exactly right. I think it's the whole thing of staying within the community, and hopefully he'll come back, you know. I'd love for that when he has kids and stuff. So we'll see.
Is this YouTube your full-time job now? I think last time we talked, you still had a day job.
Yeah, I started. So I left my full-time job end of last year. So started this full-time in January, and no regrets. It's been good. I got lots of good things happening, and it was just so hard to put energy so many different ways. I was doing the best I could, but I also didn't, you know, I've shared that on my channel too, that I think I was trying to set a good example that you don't just, oh, this looks amazing, I'm going to run after it. And then,
Oops. Have you always been such a responsible, level-headed person?
No, I don't think so. I've been a knucklehead like everybody else.
Those rowdy teen years of dad, how do I?
Oh, I can't believe I did that, you know, and it was like 30 years ago. And you're thinking of this memory of, what was I thinking? So I think we all do that.
But that's all about forgiveness. That's the importance of forgiveness. That's
forgive
the
yourself.
Superpower of forgiveness.
Yeah.
Do you have, so you're looking at what sustainability looks like for the channel and growth and whatnot. Are you hoping to go into these meetings and what the future holds, still holding an important part of it being a personal project? Or now, do you feel the responsibility is more about getting as much of the message out to as many people as possible and you being the catalyst for that?
Yeah, I'm trying to figure it out. I got so many different opportunities to try to figure, and I what I've said to some of the people that I've spoken to, I said, I just need somebody smarter than me to have the vision of what this could be. Because I think you know, without me being the smartest person, it's still growing, you know, and still, and the notoriety of who I am, like you said, my channel, you know, grows. I don't, might not get the views, but I'm definitely getting more well known, all over the world. So it's not just here. And so, you know, going back to the original plan of trying to encourage and empower people, and also to help, you know, I just think there's more to it. I think there's still more to be done with it to encourage dads and understand, you know, try to help dads recognize, because there's, you know, we get beat up, unfortunately, in sitcoms and Al Bundy's and Homer Simpson's, and we're a bunch of big doofuses that don't know what we're doing, and it's okay to pick on dad. And
it is kind of a trope, yeah.
Hate it. I hate it, because dads are so valuable. And sadly, I think it encourages guys to go, I'm not needed. I'm not respected. I'm not necessary. And so I'm just going to go, you know, do something else, or, you know, move into a cabin in the woods somewhere, or, you know, leave my family or what have you. And so whatever I can do to move the needle on that, even if it helps one person to go rethink their decision to say, no, you're valuable. And so I'd love to lean into that more,
to reach your dads in the audience, more dads in the audience than kids.
Well, dads, as well as these future dads, you know, these kids that are going to eventually be, you know, get the opportunity. And I always say, you know, if you get the opportunity, do better. If your dad didn't do it, you know, wasn't the ideal dad, do the best you can to break that cycle, because we need it. You know, the society needs the good dads, and we need to kind of bond together and encourage each other that we're valuable. You know, we have to fight that idea that we're not.
What would your advice to a new dad be?
I've had a chance to think of this a lot. And I think one thing I would say is, this isn't something I did, but if you could write a mission statement when your kid is born, I think would go a long way, because it's written down. When goals are written down, they're valuable. And when you start a business, you have a mission statement, right? It's standard procedure when you start a business to write a mission statement. When you are a dad, that's not standard procedure. It's, you know, you hope, I hope I do it all right. And I know I made a lot of promises to my kid when she was born, when Christine, my first daughter, my first kid, or our first kid, was born at 1:45 in the morning. I'm holding her and just amazed at this little kid here, a little baby. And I'm promising her the world, but I think it would be valuable if people would write down a mission statement and say, this is what I want to do. And then, like a business, you can adjust, but it's something that I got to remember, this is what I'm trying to do. This is the goal of what we're hoping to do as a dad.
Is there anything you would have gone back and changed raising your kids? What were some of your mistakes?
Yeah, I think there's times where it would have been helpful. Since my dad and my stepmom weren't really involved, I think it would have been helpful to have an older generation person to be able to say, that's not that big a deal. Don't sweat that so much. There's times where you know, and I think as a new parent too, you're always like, my kid's not walking yet. And Billy down the street's already running around. And he's 2 months younger than him. You know,
that Billy's a powerhouse.
You know, the comparison thing, I think, especially when you never done it before and you don't necessarily have people around saying, hey, it's going to be okay. I think that's a thing. I think sports, there's a lot too much emphasis on sports. I think, you know, when we were younger, or when I was younger, you know, you could play multiple sports and stuff, and it was good, and the discipline. And I think there was a lot of things we can teach, but sadly it's become so specialized now that you have to, if you're baseball, you got to choose when you're in sixth grade, you got to determine that that's what you're going to play, and you've got to do all these different things. And so I wish I would have had pulled myself back and gone, you know what, probably not going to be a pro baseball player. I think it's better that we kind of do different things, try things out, you know, and not put so much emphasis on that. That's a big regret I have with my son, that I felt like I maybe was living vicariously through him, even though I played college football, you know, I was competitive and all that. And so I did see a lot of people that never did anything in sports and putting so much pressure on their kids to be so good at sports. I'm like, well,
it's the sports dad syndrome. Yeah. It's like a kind of,
I don't think you ever did anything. And yet you think your kid's going to be the next Babe Ruth or something. And I at least did play college football, you know? So I did have that experience of, and so I felt like there was at least a chance of him maybe being something, but some of these people, crazy how much pressure they put on
the kids. What position did you play?
I played split end. I played tight end in high school and then split end in college.
Huh. Well, tight end. That's like the most important position, it seems like, these days. There's like a national tight end day. Well, that's brand new and made
there
up.
There is now with Kelsey and Kittle.
Yeah.
And,
George Kittle. And yeah.
See, all the K names, Rob Kenny, I would have fit right in. Kelsey, Kittle.
Yeah. You watch a lot of football?
I do. Yeah.
Who are your teams?
One weakness. So I'm in Seattle. So I'm a Seahawks fan, but I'm also a Steelers fan. That goes back to the Franco Harris immaculate reception, Lynn Swan.
It's kind of tough to be a Steelers fan right now.
It is. It's they kill me.
Well, Seattle too. I know Seattle's a little bit better than I thought they would be. But was the whole town of Seattle just like outraged when your quarterback went to the Broncos?
At first, and then it was like, what a deal these guys swung. but Russell's doing good now. I don't wish him ill will, but he was it's like, wow,
this is like the modern trajectory for quarterbacks. It seems like they play their entire career in one team, and then late in their career they're like, yeah, I'm gonna move here to a different town, and everybody thinks that they're so invested in the town. Same with Russell Wilson, like, yeah, he's such a Seattle guy. He's like, nah, they're paying me a lot of money to play in Denver.
Yeah. I'm glad to see him doing well. I'm glad. Yeah. We were feeling a little bit bad for Denver because we felt like we fleeced him.
But he got booed when he came to play in Seattle there the first time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Welcome to Sports Talk.
Sports Talk.
That's right.
Can I ask how many messages you get in a day, kind of in aggregate over all of the platforms, if you're just to kind of like ballpark it? How many messages in an average day do you just get from the internet?
Boy, that's hard to say because I don't necessarily check all the platforms every day.
Fair enough.
Yeah. So, are you counting comments as messages? Because they kind of are, you know, directed towards me or saying something about, hundreds.
Yeah.
So. Hundreds and hundreds. So you mentioned earlier the pressure that a dad, I feel pressure. I have 1 5-year-old and it feels like the entire world is on my shoulders.
Yeah.
How does it feel to not only have that with your own children, but now this new responsibility? And is there anything that you do actively to like disconnect from all of that and allow yourself to like, you know, just have your own space and not those expectations?
Yeah, I try to. It's hard. And I think I remember talking to both you guys about this, about, do you spend time doing that, you know, but it's hard. I'm sure you guys can relate when you know, social media can be tough. It's a tough place. And I'm encouraging people to get out and do stuff. And yet I'm on social media because I'm on social media.
Yeah, that's where you encourage them to get off of social media.
It's so ironic. Yeah. It's just crazy. But it's hard. It's hard to make sure to carve out that time. In the morning, I definitely have my morning time before I ever look at it. I need that alone time to be able to stay grounded. And that helps me too. Again, my faith, I think, helps me to try to not think more highly of myself than I ought. I was telling my wife, her family, she's 1 of 8, I'm 1 of 8. We end up spending quite a bit of time with her, and I'm grateful for her family because they just treat me like I'm just me instead of anybody that's, you know, got a massive following. And so I appreciate that. It's nice to just have normal conversations and not people going, oh, I'm like, I appreciate the fact that you like what I do, but I'm just a normal guy. I'm not anything, you know, that you feel like you have to feel uncomfortable around.
You get people stop you in public and talk to you?
I do. And I've tried to get my head around that too. I've tried to be gracious about it. And then I think sometimes I'm like, I should have said that, or what should I have said there? Because yeah. I was just at Costco recently and my wife and I were there.
I had the same thing at Costco. Why is it with Costco? Really? Yeah, that happens.
I've had it at Costco a couple of times too.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. Like, yeah.
I don't know what it is. They just must know I shop at Costco. But but I was walking around and this lady, I could tell she kind of, and I get weird looks all the time. A lot of times people just don't say anything. But
you can sense it.
Yeah, you can sense it for sure. Mm-hmm. And then she came back over to me and she said, "Are you the guy on Instagram?" And I said, "Yeah, I am." And then she said, "Oh, I really like what you do." I'm like, "Oh, well, thank you." And then she turned around and walked away. Like,
well, it's like, it's an awkward thing.
Should I have done more? I don't know. I think it took her a lot to have the courage to come talk to me, I guess. And sure. So I like, and there was another gal at Costco too. Speaking of Costco. So she came up and then she started to walk away and I'm like, "Wait, would you like a picture?" And she said, "Oh, I would love it." And so then she took a picture with me and then I asked her name. So I'm trying to, you know, I don't know what I'm doing. So I'm an introvert. I'm just trying to do my shopping at Costco. So I have tried to process that in my head in future, you know, I should ask them their name. Cause I think it's important that people feel seen. I just did a video today, this morning that I put up. And I said, I hope that you feel seen. I think people you know, we all do. I think it's nice to know that I'm not alone in this world. Somebody sees me, you know, because I think you can feel like so many people in the world and I'm just a number walking through life. And I think we all appreciate being seen.
It's a good strategy. Whenever I have those interactions over the years, I've kind of learned the same thing, to ask their name and then simply tell them you appreciate them watching. I think that they really respond to that well. It's just, "Thank you, I really appreciate you watching the show." And usually
you're not doing it to be manipulative. No. It's sincere. I do appreciate the people that
absolutely. And I think it's very, sometimes it can be really courageous for somebody to come up to you and talk to you like that. I mean, I've encountered like big celebrities before and I'm always a little bit, should I say something or should I not say something? And you go over this in your mind, you know, am I going to ruin their day? Am I going to interrupt whatever they're doing? So yeah, right. I think it's cool.
Yeah.
These people living their lives because they have fans like us who would probably look at it the exact same way that we just said we would look at it, where you like thank them for watching it. And it certainly isn't an intrusion.
Yeah.
But it's funny. It feels that way. I remember I passed the comedian Jim Gaffigan in New York City and he was just walking on the sidewalk. And he's like, at the time, he was like my mentor comedian. Da, da, da. And I kept turning back and I remember it like it was yesterday, simply because I feel it was a regret. It was like, it would have been so easy just to go up and be like, "Hey, because it would have given him a charge too. Like, he would have probably really enjoyed that interaction.
You know who was the coolest celebrity with fans was Robin Williams. When he lived in San Francisco and even here when he lived in Marin, you could just, he would, because he was such a regular guy, and he would be walking down like Geary Street in San Francisco, which is near where he lived over in Seacliff. And people would just say, "Robin, hey," and he would just wave and say, "Hey, what's up?" And he would take the time and talk to people. And he was like always on. So he could always like turn on his Robin Williams shtick. And it was such a cool thing that he, even at that level, he was connected to people.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's powerful. Celebrity is such an interesting thing because, you know, I think when I was speaking of Steelers fan, you know, I've always been a Lynn Swann fan. I always thought he was amazing. And I think if I ever met him, I would probably be weak in the knees because I would just
be giggling like a schoolgirl.
I probably would. But but it's funny because I was at this one fundraiser a few years ago before Dad, How Do I? And I was, and there were some famous people there, and there's this guy sitting next to me, and I started talking to him. I had no idea who he was, but this other gal came up and sat next to me, and she goes, "Do you know who that is?" And I said, "I have no idea." She said, "Oh, he's this, some sounder, you know, we have the sounders here. He's a sounder great." And she, I can't even, Levesque, I think was his name. Levesque goes by one name apparently, cause he's so famous around here, but I didn't, I had no idea who the guy was. So I thought he was just a nice guy, and he probably appreciated the fact that I didn't, you know, I just talked to him like a normal guy. And so it's kind of funny, cause again, you know, if it was Lynn Swann sitting next to me, I probably wouldn't have the guts to go talk to him. But
see, that's why each of us just has a single name, Chad. It's just Chad and Steve, because we're that level of
Cher, Madonna, like really Prince. You get to that point where if you can just be known for by one name, that's the secret.
Rob, it was great having you on the show again. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It was nice talking to you guys. Nice getting caught up again, and we'll have to do it again in the future.